This week, the U.S. equities rally continued with the Dow Jones Industrials finishing at the highest point in over a century. It's a pleasure to be with you. Your host, Chris Walczak, here with two more must-hear guest interviews. Well, the investor love affair with U.S. equities continues. Shares soared to levels unseen since at least the year 2000 and in a couple of the indexes in their history. Is the bullish stampede on the verge of a new downtrend? My first guest says so. Michael Pento, president and founder of Pento Portfolio Strategies, makes his debut on Gold Seek Radio. Fed policymakers are just bluffing, he says. There's simply just too much debt per GNP. And we saw our gross domestic product drop sharply now, three times in a row. It's officially a trend, and it looks like we might have negative growth, i.e. a recession, as soon as this year. He thinks so. The Fed will never again have the opportunity to normalize interest rates without sending the economy into a tailspin. He advises gold investors to keep a close watch out for an inversion of the yield curve in the yellow metal. Then the head of the Trends Research Institute, Gerald Celente, returns with his take on gold and U.S. equities. He's watching geopolitical events escalating in Syria and North Korea with powerful implications for global investors. Once the yellow metal crosses 1400, it's off to the races, 2000 and beyond. And remember, we'd like for you to call into our Q&A hotline, 1-641-715-3900. We'd like for you to jot it down, plus our extension 514049 will get you right into the mailbox, and you can leave your questions and comments for us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we'd like for you to sign up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter to help keep the lights on here in the studio. Our Alpha Stocks have been on fire, including one of my top picks recently. The Bitcoin ETF continues to soar from our entry points, as well as our top gold and silver candidates. So you can log in if you already have an account, or just sign up for a monthly if you like. The annual subscription is just $147, the most economical option. And then Robert Ian wraps up the show with his must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Well, the precious metal advance took a pause, a much-needed pause this week after 6 weeks of higher highs, along with the U.S. dollar. Gold dropped just 21, down to 1268 an ounce, while silver fell 59 cents, finishing at 1726. The precious metals XAU shares, though, found a really solid bottom, it appears, off just 374 at 8310, but black gold finished near break-even at 4933 and looks ready to make an assault on 55, then maybe on to 75 later this year on a breakout. The yellow metal climbed on Friday, though, with a monthly gain of over 1% on news of weak U.S. economic growth, which weighed on the U.S. dollar. On Friday, weaker than expected first quarter gross domestic product figures indicated just 0.7% annual increase for the first quarter. That was well off 2.1% and 3.5% from last year and much below economists' forecast. Clearly, the American consumer is holding on to their dineros, which could curtail Fed rate hikes. The current Fed funds futures models suggest a rate hike in June. My model indicates that could be the last for the year, which I think is firmly at odds at many of the comments we've heard from our Fed chiefs. In related news, the European Central Bank also held its monetary policy steady, a positive for the precious metals, as the EU economic ministers are clearly perturbed by political tensions surrounding the elections in France and terrorist events. Elsewhere, the people of India continue to display their intense affinity for the precious metals, but following the shift to digital currencies, procuring the metal has been challenging. Millions of Indians buy gold for religious festivals and the wedding season, as well as an investment. Demand is so high that their mining industry is struggling to keep up. Imports of $4 billion continue to pour into the nation of 1.31 billion people last month alone. Currently, Indians hold 24,000 tons of gold. That's about $1 trillion and two times more than the entire United States gold reserves. A simple app and a smartphone will allow any Indian to buy and sell the precious metal. Paytm, the country's top digital payments platform announced that it would allow virtually anyone to buy gold and silver as well as sell and still have the metal delivered to their homes. Elsewhere, gold holdings and related ETFs, the Spider shares, ticker GLD, as well as IAU, added over 47 tons of gold since the beginning of the year, but that's nothing compared to gold imports out of Hong Kong. Net gold flows to China's mainland from Hong Kong were massive, 112 metric tons in March alone. That's twice the typical reading, and the trend of increases persists. China is the key purchaser from Hong Kong with 191 metric tons, so as much as 1,000 tons could potentially flow into the rousing Dragon Nation this year. Precious metals bottom line. Well, despite the swoon in the U.S. greenback, the precious metals rally paused finally, and that's a much needed pause, I think, this week. Silver is retesting former support, but black gold, I think, is also holding support, so technically we're still on the path for higher highs and retests of the 2016 highs later this year. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, visibility virtually unlimited over the New York Stock Exchange on new details from the U.S. administration on the corporate tax reform plans. By Friday's close, the Dow Jones Industrials added about 400 for the week, finishing just shy of 21,000. The S&P picked up 35 points, ending at 2384, while the NASDAQ added 140, ending at 6047, an all-time record weekly close as well. And the Bitcoin ETF, GBTC, picked up 11 points, near 140. And the top story moving the markets, the White House provided an outline of the broad tax plan this week. Nevertheless, an analyst noted that the source of revenues were conspicuously absent from the literature. The news added support to the U.S. equities rally. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Well, as I noted in the last report, the greed and fear index indicated the herd was on the wrong side of the trade and we would see a rally. And that's exactly what came to pass this week. So I'll keep it simple this week. The bullish trend remains intact. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. It's a pleasure to welcome Michael Penta, my featured guest today, Austrian economist and veteran on Wall Street and in the financial media. He's been regularly seen CNBC, CNN, Bloomberg, Fox Business, and his curriculum vitae extends way beyond that. Welcome to the show, Michael Pinto.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're concerned that the Fed, they might surprise investors with a rate cut. And Peter Schiff has mentioned something along those lines here on the show as well. Please tell us more.
I think they have to revert down to a loosening monetary policy. And the reason why I say this is because we have a record amount of debt in the United States and in the world. The world has debt of 300% of GDP, $230 trillion. The United States has $20 trillion national debt. Our actual aggregate debt is 350% of GDP. That's corporate debt, national debt, all private debt. So we are at the same level now, today, debt as a percentage of GDP, as we were in 2007 before the whole economy began to unwind. So the Fed has duped itself into believing that it could raise interest rates. And not only that, they're talking about draining the balance sheet. They have taken the balance sheet from $800 billion prior to the credit crisis, circa 2008, to $4.5 trillion. They've duped themselves into believing they can actually start selling the longer-dated treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. And they also duped themselves into believing they can take the Fed funds rate from where it was, 0 to 25 basis points, back up well above 2. Now, I'll pull your attention, and your audience should be aware of this, perhaps, that the 10-year note is yielding 2.3%. The spread between the 2.3% 10-year note and a Fed funds rate that's going to be, according to the dot plot from the Federal Reserve, well above 2% in the end of 2018. So I have to ask the Federal Reserve, why are they not afraid of a flat yield curve? That's when money supply dries up. That's when recessions ensue. And at that point, they'll only have 8 25-point rate reductions in their arsenal. So the Fed should be very afraid. They've created a record amount of debt, a record amount of asset bubbles, both stocks, bonds, and in real estate. And they will never be able to, in my opinion, never be able to normalize interest rates again without sending the economy into a tailspin.
You know, and that's quite a luxury they've had, I'm sure you'd agree, to be able to pull this off. It was just a brief moment in time. We look at the Fed's balance sheet at the Fed there in St. Louis website, and we are starting to see an uptick in their balance sheet. Do you expect this trend to continue? Will they pull a 2008-style higher debt levels as this mortgage-backed security debt becomes less less attractive to the public, the MBS, CDSs, and things of that nature.
So they threatened to start unwinding the balance sheet at the end of 2017 to early 2018. I think the very high likelihood is that the Fed has already tightened enough to send the economy into recession. Let's talk about the economy for a second here. So we have very anemic GDP growth. It was 2% from 2010, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. 2016 was 1.6% growth for that year. Q1 2017, according to the Atlanta Fed, has a zero handle, 0.5% GDP growth. And the reason for that is, one of the reasons for that is, the entire economy recovered from the Great Recession by what? By taking interest rates that were 5.25% down to 0%, leaving them below 1%, so 1% Fed funds rate or below for 100 months, which forced a bunch of new money into the canyons and around the canyons of Wall Street and in the real estate sector and, of course, by definition, into the bond market, taking bonds to yield 0%. We had $14 trillion worth of sovereign debt around the globe that was negative yielding. That was all the result of Mario Draghi from the ECB, the Bank of Japan, Mr. Kuroda, and, of course, Bernanke and Yellen. And as I said, the Fed has been tightening interest rates since December of 2013. That is when they began to taper. So I believe very strongly in a flow versus stock analysis in the Fed's balance sheet. I believe when they stopped buying $80 billion worth of mortgage backs and treasuries per month, they started to attenuate that down to zero. So they started that in December 2013. They ended it in 2014. Then they raised interest rates three times, and I believe that has been enough to crush economic growth. As I said, 0.5%, Atlanta Fed, that's not me, it's the Atlanta Fed. And there's a very high possibility that they'll never be able to get to start unwinding their balance sheet because we will be in a recession by the end of this year.
I know there's going to be the listener out there who says, wait, anemic GDP, sluggish economy, but we do have the lowest or near the lowest overall national unemployment rate. Why isn't it a fair assessment of employment in our country?
The unemployment rate is the number of people looking for jobs based on the number of people in the labor force. So I would assume that if everybody stopped looking for a job, in the numerator we go to zero and you'd have an unemployment rate of zero. But that's a U3 number. I look at U6 numbers, and that is a matter of the fallow labor force utility. So those are people who are working part-time for economic reasons or have stopped looking for work altogether. So if you add that number back into it, there's millions and millions of fallow workers that can be brought back into the labor force if they thought they had a viable job. So I don't buy that unemployment rate for one second, and I don't think the Fed does either. Would the Fed be? I mean, if you took the fact that we have negative CPI headline and core, and a 0.5% GDP growth in Q1, and 98,000 net non-farm jobs created in the month of March, you would assume that the Fed would be in a loosening mode, not tightening monetary policy. So they know that there is a lot of, actually, I would say millions of workers out there.
Couldn't we make the case? Much of these bubbles that we've seen are also a result of tremendous inflows of capital from the EU, from Asia.
But I could argue that China is a huge bubble that's about to burst. Their debt is growing at four times the rate of GDP. That's unsustainable. And we all know what's going on in Japan. Japan is a retirement nation with 250% debt to GDP. And Mr. Kuroda has an inflation target of 2%, and their 10-year treasury is yielding zero. So you have to tell me what a kind of toxic cocktail, what kind of recipe that involves when you have a bankrupt nation with an inflation target and a 10-year note that is 200 basis points below the inflation target and can never, ever even think about paying back its obligation. This is the case in China. It's the case in Europe. It's the case in Japan. And I mean, the United States might look a little bit better, but I look at the United States as being in the vanguard. Remember, we were in the lead on this quantitative easing programs, and now we are in the process of tightening monetary policy. There are some people on the Federal Reserve, the FOMC, who believe they can raise rates 5 times in total in 2017. Five. There are some people that are 4 and 5 times this year. So they're in for a very rude awakening. The only investors who believe that are stock investors, which are not as smart as fixed income investors. Now, if you look at the fixed income market, a 2.3% treasury tells you a lot about how much growth and inflation is being priced into the market right now. And I want to mention this. I want to make sure I get this out to your audience. Now, all the talk I hear about rapid earnings growth, you know, I did a lot of research recently, and it might surprise your listeners to know that for all of 2016, if you look at the earnings of the S&P 500, they're virtually at the same level they were in 2014. So we haven't had any real earnings growth in the stock market. If you look at corporate tax receipts, they're down 18% in the first 6 months of 2017 versus the 2016. So corporate tax receipts are falling, anemic GDP growth, and we have geopolitical tensions that are between nuclear nations that are really higher than they've been in many, many years. And yet we have central banks around the world have started to switch into a tightening mode. Now, this happened before. It happened before. Don't forget we took interest rates in the United States down to 1%. We left them there for 1 year, so 12 months at 1%. As opposed to 100 months of 1% or less, that blew up the housing bubble circa 2002 to 2007. And the Fed took interest rates from 1% to 5.25%. And that's when the yield curve flattened. That's when it inverted. And that's what caused the destruction of the real estate market and the global economy. And I think that is where we're headed. And you want to talk about when is it a good time to really increase your exposure to gold. When you see that yield curve flatten out, you know you're only months away from a very dramatic, trenchant change in monetary policy, from months away from a recession and from, I believe, unprecedented declines in GDP growth like we haven't seen since the Great Depression.
No, I appreciate that indicator, and you make it clear in your literature and on your newsletter. Take a look at the S&P, the Case-Shiller S&P chart. I mean, we obviously have the echo bubble. In fact, I believe it's eclipsed the last peak of 2007. We have multiple bubbles this time around. It's as though we didn't learn our lesson, Michael Pinto. Tell us more.
Well, we have a triumvirate of bubbles, as I like to say. So we had a bubble, a localized bubble in the housing market in the early part of the 2000s, but that was fairly concentrated in the subprime lending market. Now we have record high real estate prices in the United States, but we also have, and I mentioned this before, a record amount, and you could, you have to really slap yourself some cold water on the face when you think about this. We have negative yielding sovereign debt. That means that governments are getting paid to borrow money. And in some cases, even corporates in Europe are being paid to borrow money. So there's a bubble in the bond market. In fact, I wrote a book about it called The Coming Bond Market Collapse. I wrote that book in late 2012, early 2013. I never dreamed that an investor would actually pay to lend money to a sovereign or to a corporation. And the truth is that there's not many investors that are doing that. It's mostly central banks. And there is no escape from that with impunity. That cannot happen. It's a toxic cocktail of record debt, unbelievable, unprecedented low interest rates, and inflation targets. And those three conditions taken together are incendiary beyond belief.
No, exactly. And topping the list there of the central banks that you referred to, People's Bank of China, 3.75% at last check, at least.
Listen, Chris, that's why you're hearing more and more about a cashless society. I mean, I thought this was, shocking when I first heard about it. When you really start to analyze the reasons why, you know, if they tell you that you're a depositor and you have money in the bank and you're going to be losing 3% a year, you're going to start taking your money out of the banking system and put it under mattresses. So the way around that, and this is starting to metastasize around the world, they're starting to get rid of cash. And that means that one of two things: you can keep your money in the bank or you can spend it, but you cannot hoard cash, which means the purchasing power of your money that has been completely usurped from you and taken over by the government. And the government can make interest rates as negative as they want.
And nowhere is this more evident than, of course, Prime Minister Modi in India, where we've seen their two lowest denominations eliminated from circulation. It put the economy into a tailspin for months, and interestingly, right at the peak gold buying season, so that, the demand for gold fell off the cliff, and that's 80% of their transactions, as you may know, with these two lower denominations. So this push towards digital, we see this everywhere. What does that translate into for the typical investor listening to our voices today?
Purchasing power, and it means that the way around the next crisis, and as I said, I touched on it briefly, that the next crisis will probably occur when the Fed takes the Fed funds rate to close to 2%. So we only have maybe a handful at the most, and that's just assuming the 10-year doesn't fall back to where it was last July, 1.3%. So if it does start falling back to where it was, 1.4, 1.5%, around the middle of last year, then we only have one or two more rate hikes. Don't forget, we have rate hike, Fed funds rate, then we have the 2-10 spread. So I believe one more rate hike will be enough if the 10-year continues to fall to completely flatten out the yield curve. That means you only have, as I say, maybe, 6 25-point rate hikes left in the arsenal. So the Fed is asking themselves, well, wait a second. I really can't take rates from 5.25 down to zero like I did last time, as Mr. Bernanke did. I really can only take interest rates down from 1.5 to zero on the Fed funds rate. So that's not going to be enough. And I've already expanded my balance sheet from $800 billion to $4.5 trillion. And the national debt went from $10 trillion to $20 trillion. So where is the ability to rescue the economy from the next recession? Can they, the debt, which, by the way, the deficit is already up significantly year over year. That's before we have any tax cuts. That's before we really enter to the big demographic time bomb. So deficits are already going back to $1 trillion. Then you have a recession. That means deficits go back well above $2 trillion. So are we going to add another TARP-like program on top of that? No, that's not going to work. And they know they're not going to take the balance sheet to, they hopefully won't have to take the balance sheet up to, 10, $20 trillion. That's not going to really work either. And they don't have the room left in the relief for interest rates. So I believe one of the main tools they're going to use is to use negative interest rates in the banking system. That means you'll be forced to spend your money. The velocity of money will increase very rapidly. And the money supply. So given the fact that the government is facing insolvency, given the fact that the Fed is out of real ammunition, their balance sheet has already exploded so high, and the only thing they can do to cause inflation then is to take your currency away, make it illegal, and you have noted they're taking steps around the world to doing just that, then they can hyperinflate the debt away, and there's nothing you can do about it.
There's simply no place to hide.
That's why I believe we're headed towards a form of helicopter money where you instead of doing quantitative easing, which is really just purchasing assets that exist in the primary dealers, and it's up to them if they want to create more money supply. Otherwise, it just lays at the central bank as excess reserves. Instead of doing that, they'll just do an end run around the entire primary dealers, around the banking system, and just say, hey, listen, I'm going to directly monetize government debt, so the treasury, the central bank goes right to the treasury, and the treasury spends. Or they'll do some form of direct transfer payments, where they just send you check. People say, I know your audience is very sophisticated, but maybe they don't. Maybe they know this. Maybe they don't. But hearing this, if you're not sophisticated, you're saying, what is this guy talking about? This actually happen? Well, there's a theory called that theory out there called the minimum standard of living payments, where they actually send you a check, because don't forget, robots are taking over the world, and no one's going to have a job. So there's this minimum standard of living payments.
Folks forget the $500 sent to each individual for the most part in the United States under the Bush regime. And then, of course, we're seeing this, exactly what you're talking about, that scenario written into the literature in the EU.
And the IMF is talking about this. All of the major liberal Keynesians are talking about this global minimum standard of living payments, a stipend sent from the government, because productivity coming from AI, artificial intelligence, and robots is going to supplant human workforce. Now, I don't believe that for a second. I mean, get that argument. I mean, we would think that everybody was picking a cotton field. You know, there's only one guy driving a cotton gin, and the rest of the field hands are unemployed, and they never found another thing to do in their home. But their object is to make their, and I believe it, and believe me, I am not a conspiracy theorist, and I don't like to use hyperbole, but they want to usurp as much power as they possibly can from individuals, and one of the ways to doing that is, hey, listen, if you don't have a job and you don't have an education and you don't have a career and you rely on the government for all of your sustenance, your basic living comes from the government. Everybody's going to be on a form of this welfare.
Sure, you've seen the statistics. Over half of the United States receives some form of federal aid right now. That's 150, 160 million homes. We're on the cusp of the frightening world that you've outlined, but I agree with in the past, you're right, it was the Industrial Revolution, it was the cotton gin, it was the buggy replaced by the automobile. Fast forward to today, and we're seeing what I think is an even more interesting trend, and that is the loss of white-collar jobs due to partially, and let's call it expert systems for now. In Tokyo, they just replaced 32 high-skilled, you know, educated workers from in an insurance company, the creme de creme of the intellectual world, IBM's Watson, reconfigured Watson. They're saving an enormous sum with this artificial intelligence. So that's just one example of where we could see white-collar and middle-class continue to implode.
Money managers in the financial industry are supposed to be replaced by artificial intelligence. I guess that means that there's one computer algorithm that's going to put everybody in the same asset. I'm sure that's going to work out well.
Exactly. That's well said. Let's call it a tipping point where ultimately folks have to be thinking about the preservation of their capital, any type of viable income source. Is that where we're headed? And can you give us any positive feedback for our precious metals aficionados?
I'll tell you this. I mean, there are companies out there now. One of them, in all candor, I do invest in is called Gold Money. And they have been able to create a blockchain technology that's actually backed by gold. So think of it as sort of like Bitcoin backed by physical metal. So now you know, one of the things about gold that, you know, I love gold very much. I don't consider myself a gold bug, but I think it's real and honest money. And it's because it's virtually indestructible, very rare, and extremely beautiful. And there's only a certain amount of elements that God put in the earth that qualifies for that description. But the big hang-up about gold has been it's even though it's real and honest money, it hasn't been the best currency because you have to carry around gold is very, very heavy, and it could be stolen, and it's not the best currency in the world, especially in today's modern age. But now, because of this company, you can now move gold in fractions of grams around the world seamlessly. So, I think that investors absolutely need to have between 10 and 20% in gold and gold-related investments, and that number has to increase as we get closer and closer to this, what I believe, watershed, epiphany type of collapse in the global economy that's destined to come, I would say late 2017, but for sure in 2018. And you're going to see a big battle between the fintech industry and banks and the government that wants to take your freedom away. And believe me when I tell you, your money, your purchasing power gives you and your family freedom. And if they can take that away from you, then you're in deep trouble. So take matters into your own hands. Take responsibility now, get your standard of living under your own control, and get yourself access to physical possession of precious metals.
We have insurance for our automobiles. We have insurance for our homes or our condos. We insure every aspect of our life, especially the health of our family. And the best insurance policy that we've devised so far, whether 10 to 20%, I think is a fair start. I worry in the world we're outlining whether or not we might even boost up that number. And with regard to the cryptocurrency revolution, we've actually made a very humble silverback currency called Silverbit and Silvercoin. And that's just based on the Ethereum blockchain. This is, I think, an interesting amalgamation of really useful tools. tools in this world where folks need instantaneous transactions. Of course, silver is much more divisible, and then you add in the blockchain down to, what is it, 1/100th or 1/1,000,000th of a penny. Some interesting possibilities there. And we'd like to certainly welcome you back to the show. But before we wrap up, could you tell folks more about your intriguing site, why they need to bookmark it, put it at the top of their list, what they'll find, please?
So the website is pentaport.com. You get my media appearances. You're nice enough to have me on the program, Chris, so that'll be up there. Also, I'm regular guest on CNBC, and you'll see me in Zero Hedge and sites like that. You'll get a weekly commentary. You can see my portfolios that I have. I have a sort of a passively managed fund called the Global Yield Fund, and then I have a much more actively managed fund called the Inflation Deflation Portfolio, which is what I believe is the best hedge against inflation as far as inflation equities that you can possibly own, because I model the difference between inflation and deflation, so I know when to overweight gold and when to short the stock market. You can email me at mpento@pentaport.com, and the number here for the office is 732-772-9500.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for having me.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, it's great to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's featured guest, Gerald Celente from the Trends Research Institute. Welcome back, Gerald Celente.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Let's start with the trend forecast. You know, investors ride smooth now, but worldwide sharp curves could be ahead. I think that really encapsulates it right there. Tell us more. What are we looking for?
Well, you know, look what's going on now. Current events form future trends. Just look what happened, you know, within days, the United States launched a massive missile strike against Syria. Then it drops the mother of all bombs on Afghanistan. And now we're hearing about global concern of nuclear war with North Korea. And then the administration has also just increased new military operations in Somalia and throughout Africa. So it's global. Current events form future trends. Listen to all the talk coming out of Israel, coming from our defense secretary, our secretary of state, and our president warning us about Iran. And Israel's saying that Iran threatens them with the ballistic missiles and warns of reprisals. And then take a look what's going on in South Africa, Venezuela, massive demonstrations against the ruling leaders, and they're escalating. And then look at the elections. They just, the constitutional referendum, rather, they just voted for in Turkey. And there's concerns of a dictatorial rule. Then you have the Brexit worries across the Eurozone. You have demonstrations that have been going on in Romania. It doesn't make the news. The war in Yemen increasing. Ukraine war tinderbox is lighting up again. And then again, current events form future trends. The United States has talked South Korea into putting that THAAD missile system in, and now they're installing it. What's China doing? China's saying, no, this isn't against North Korea, it's against us. And what we're going to do to you, South Korea, although you sell more of your products to us than any place else in the world, and you have a lot of businesses going on over there, now we're going to restrict trade. So these are just some of the things going on. They're warning that Trump, you know, he just put on those tariffs now against lumber coming in from Canada into the United States, that there's a, quote, sort of protectionism that hangs over the world on trade.
You first give us an idea on interest rates as well as gold, and then move on to equity markets. So let's start off with U.S. equities. I mean, obviously, we've had the remarkable post-election rally, and you're convinced, as are many of us, that this may have gotten a bit long in the tooth, but, you know, the economy might just grow solidly enough to sustain market prices and at least some type of recovery.
Well, we believe, as you said, many people are saying that there has to be a a pullback at some point. Nothing goes straight up. And what the really, it hinges upon, you know, Trump's great rally is based on expectations of lower taxes, which they're now talking about, less regulation, which they're doing, and massive infrastructure development and job creation. And so let's talk about the massive infrastructure development and job creation. It's not that massive. It's $1 trillion over 10 years. Obama put one in, it was $861 billion. It's a $4 trillion, you know, budget. You know, $100 billion a year is not big dough. So that's not going to make much of a difference. The expectations for lower taxes, will it help corporations? Yes, but how will it help the people? Because that's the other issue. You know, while we see consumer confidence right now in the United States is at a decade high, consumers aren't putting their money where their mouth is. So now, does that mean that this tax break is not going to help consumers? Because you look at the stats. In March, restaurant same sales were down over 1%, and traffic dropped about 3.5% year to year. So those are the realities. Look at retail sales. Now, it's not only online sales that are going down. They're driven down in large part by declining auto sales. And that's sparking fears of an auto subprime loan meltdown. And we've long forecast, by the way. It's not going to be like the housing crisis meltdown, but it will have an impact. And you're seeing it already. Spending on vehicles and parts has fallen for 3 straight months, and that's the longest streak of decline since the panic of 08. You saw retail sales spike about over 5%. This year they're down 0.1%. So it goes back again. You know, will the Trump rally... It may be good for Wall Street, but is it going to help Main Street? And so those are some of the issues that need to be looked at. Then, again, Trump is backtracking. Again, for better or for worse, it's just what is. You remember he came out as campaign when he was campaigning for the White House. Then recently, Case came out in favor of low interest rates. So now, from it being a 60% futures bet, that interest rates would go up. Now that's fallen down to 36%. And of course, that's good for gold. If interest rates don't go up, then gold prices stay higher. And gold has been able to withstand the recent rally as well, the 400-point increase in the Dow since the elections went favorable for the centrist candidate. Our forecast, and we've been saying this now for a number of years, is that gold has to go strongly, and you hit the number for over 1,400. You don't have to see 1440, 1480, 1450, 1490, 1430, 1460, you know, 1440, 1470. It has to play in that range. And when it breaks over that strongly and stays in there, then we see a spike toward 2000. And the downside risk, we only see about $100 to $150, $150.
because, you know, you're looking at, that's what it costs to get out of the ground, you know. And what also went over some of the global issues. The reason why Bitcoin, for example, one of the great reasons why prices are rising is people are fearful of currency devaluations. That's another backtrack on Trump, by the way. He said that China was purposely manipulating its currency. They spent over $1 trillion going into their reserves trying to pump it up over the year and a half. And they're putting all these restrictions on currency outflows to stop them from happening. So people are buying Bitcoin and gold. And that's what you're looking at. As you well know, and the listeners, there's the physical market and there's the gambling market. The gambling market's very different than the physical market. And now in India as well, you're seeing gold purchases go up. So what I'm saying is, you know, the world is bigger than the United States, of 320 million in a population of about, what, 7.2 billion? So you're going to start looking at strong physical demand as prices go lower. And you're also going to see more foreign banks, central banks buy it up as the prices go lower. So we only see a downside risk of about $100 to $150 and an upside potential of $2,000 when it strongly breaks over.
That's exactly what we see. The bottom in place, we've had the nadir, but it's certainly something we want in our portfolios. Let's shift gears over to another great topic in this latest Trends Journal, the winter 2017 Trends Journal. And of course, we have money madness. How big is the legal marijuana trend? Think 1933, the end of prohibition. But the health benefits are just stacking up here. And, you know, ironically, this is still a Schedule I substance. So researchers have a very difficult time finding any financing to do any really solid research in the area.
What you're looking at worldwide is more and more research coming out, the medical benefits of marijuana. I mean, really, if the planet could feed us, could it heal us? All the research is there, and where the leading research is coming, by the way, is out of Israel and Spain. Just, you know, in early this month, we saw Canada legalize. And so that's where you're seeing it changing. It's changing all over the world, except in the USA. And you have a guy like Jerk Sessions, who calls himself Jeff Sessions, saying that this is almost, marijuana is almost as bad as heroin. What kind of bullshit are
you? I just am fascinated by this whole war. You sink your teeth into this. What you find is the places that we really have to focus on, as you say, heroin, crack, cocaine, and of course methamphetamines. These are the danger points that really destroy lives. There is zero evidence that cannabis destroys lives. In fact, we're finding substantial evidence to the contrary. And, you know, this is little known to the public, but the U.S. government actually funded a study, and it's still funded today, where folks with very specific medical needs received 3 joints a day, every day for decades. And guess what the end result was? Perfect health, no symptoms of the underlying disease, and 0 pharmaceuticals. And the worst side effect was I was too happy.
Well, again, you know, there's more to it. You just saw recently in USA Today, you know, the headline story, marijuana may be a miracle treatment for children with autism. That's USA Today. They have all of these pensions that they can't meet, and it's the bottom line. So you're going to see more and more states legalizing it. Just like when I was a kid, I remember they used to run the numbers. And it used to be, if you guess the last 3 numbers of the attendance at Aqueduct Raceway, you won the numbers. And the vegetable man used to sell them. The guy used to come around in a truck. Oh, and they break them, you know. The people that can afford it the least are gambling on this. Oh, sure, it's only a quarter or a dollar a day, but they can't afford it. And they, you know, they made a big deal out of it. They break, but then it became lotto, and you had to be in it to win it. And then, so they got the revenue from it. Now it's, you know, Mega Millions and Mega this and Mega that. So it has nothing to do with the morality of the issue. It has to do, is it going to bring in money? And states and cities need money. So we're going, look at Colorado. All of a sudden, Colorado legalizes it. And they're bringing in more money in tax revenue on pot than they are on booze. It's phenomenal. Same thing is happening in the state of Washington. So it's only what we're looking at now, or as we said, this is the early stages of when they did away with prohibition in the 1930s. All states didn't go right away to alcohol, and some of them had different laws. That's what you're going to see now.
We're on board with you, and we're going to shift gears one more time. This is the only Asian country that I can find where marijuana is essentially legal, North Korea. And we've all seen the headlines. We have major fleet en route, if it's in the general vicinity, aircraft carrier fleet. Plus, we read of 150,000 troops pulling on the Russian and China border line. Are we looking for some type of strategic takedown of Kim Jong-un? Are they concerned by this? All these missile launches? It's about doubled since his predecessor.
Poor country, and I've been hearing about North Korea most of my life, and we have to worry about them, because after all, look what's Afghanistan, a 16-year war, on the Taliban that Jimmy Carter created to overthrow the Russians, but people forget that, and if they didn't like that, then they had the Mujahideen that they created that brought people like bin Laden to get the Russians out of Afghanistan because of the radical Taliban that was trying to overthrow it, that the Americans put in there, and now they're getting rid of. And we're still there for 16 years. Oh, no, that was North Korea that did that. Oh, and North Korea, look what they did to Gaddafi. You know, he had to go too, because, you know, he wasn't a good humanitarian. And then, of course, there's also Syria. And look what North Korea's done there. And now, of course, they brought troops into Somalia. But, of course, that's only the United States. Has killed millions of people in these unjust wars and in foreign entanglements we should not be involved in. So here we're talking about North Korea, a tiny little country. Didn't the United States just do an ICBM launch? How many missiles does every other country test? The reason why North Korea has missiles and why they have nuclear weapons is because they learned, and they've said this, from Gaddafi and Saddam Hussein, who gave up their nuclear program and then were overthrown. So they don't want the same thing to happen. And then if you read the news rather than the prostitute news of the United States with all the little flunkies that repeat the government lines, read what China's saying. China's saying, please, United States and South Korea, stop doing these massive military maneuvers and drills and firing all of these weapons off the coast of North Korea. Oh, no, we have every right to do it. Oh, you do? How about if North Korea, China, Russia, and Iran did massive military maneuvers off the Gulf of Mexico, off San Diego, and Newport News in Virginia? It's more the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower, five-star general, supreme commander of the Allied forces, and two terms president, warned us about.
I read this article this week. The article essentially just vilified the North Korean people. I mean, I just thought, what propaganda is this? These people are starving. They're hardworking. They're family-oriented. They're growing food. They grow food, Gerald, in every container that they can find in the dumpster. If you go to North Korea, Pyongyang, all you find is everyone has a garden. You have a tiny little apartment. Every wall is lined with anything that can grow. These are survivors. They remind me of the rugged American work ethic that we saw 100 years ago. But we're going to receive judgment if we don't stop attacking these helpless people. I'm getting off my soapbox. Any parting thoughts for our listeners today? Any other hot spots you'd like to share before we wrap up?
Oh, I think we've covered it pretty well. And, of course, there's Russia. You know, the United States is increasing its military budget by, what, $54 billion. We're spending over $600 billion already. You know what Russia's total military budget is? $48 billion. That's smaller than what we're raising it. But all of this anti-Russian propaganda we're getting every day as well. And it's not only here, it's throughout the world, throughout the Western world. They're blaming Russians for hacking into the French elections. They're blaming Russians for Brexit. I'm not making this up. And of course, they blamed them for the hacking into the DNC without any evidence being shown. And it's the same thing with the attack in against Syria, when blaming them for using sarin gas, which they denied. And there's also MIT Professor Postol, who's done an extensive research on this, showing that it was not the Syrian government, and they had no interest in doing it, because the Russians and the Syrians would be becoming very successful in getting rid of the so-called moderate rebels. And we all know what the moderate rebels look like. We've seen pictures of them. We know their names, and we know them by heart. You know, of course we don't. And then it's just, and what we're doing is the United States is supporting these radical groups. So anyway, when we're looking at the facts, what they're doing is they're taking us to war.
Are you drawing any parallels with your war thesis and the 100 senators called to the White House to discuss North Korea?
Yes, we are. And again, we're hearing more and more from Israel warning us about Iran. And so we see the United States and Israel ganging up against Iran. They're calling Iran the biggest sponsor of world terrorism. They're not. Oh, they support Hezbollah. Yeah, they support Hezbollah because they're Lebanese and Israel occupied parts of Lebanon for a long time, and they're fighting back. You know, so to say that, I mean, the United States is clearly what we've done in Syria, what we've done in Libya by supporting these so-called moderate rebels they've turned Libya into, that used to be the most, it was the richest country and the prosperous nation in Africa. And by the way, the reason I think we invaded Libya is the same reason we invaded Iraq.
Any other information you'd like to leave with them today?
You know, it's only $99 a year, again, when we have a discount request page. It's more than just the Trends Journal. We do Trends in the News broadcasts each weekday night. We have Trend Alerts that go out weekly and the Trends Monthly. And it's the only place where you're actually going to read history before it happens, and it's advertising free.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. This week, I reviewed a PowerPoint presentation I created in 2009 for a talk I delivered at a resource conference. The title of the presentation was Gold to Infinity: Why Gold Will Conquer Inflation. And in that presentation, I identified six of the leading experts in the gold market at that time, summarized some of their current thoughts and findings, and where their price projections were aimed for the price of gold at that time over the next 3 to 5 years. Now, this presentation was 8 years ago, and the majority of these price targets have not come to pass. And in fact, many of the trends and market situations discussed in 2009, post the economic collapse, are still in play today. And in many cases, have amplified themselves. So has gold ever hit infinity? Well, if you go back to Weimar Germany from 1919 to 1923, the price for 1 ounce of gold increased like a moonshot. In 1919, 1 ounce of gold was valued at 170 marks. In 1923, the price for 1 ounce of gold had risen to 87 trillion marks. That's an 87 followed by a dozen zeros. Now, will gold ever make monumental mega strides like that again? Well, no one really knows. The price points discussed by the experts in my talk were nowhere near 87 trillion marks. But even by today's standards, they were substantial price targets that ranged from a low of $1,650 to $10,000 an ounce and more. But what is it that gives gold this potential confidence? Why is gold perceived to be good? Well, it's been accepted globally for over 6,000 years. Gold has no counterparty risk. Gold cannot go bankrupt. That is physical gold. Physical gold can't be printed out of thin air, like currency units can. And gold doesn't require faith or credit or confidence to be valued. Gold is an end in itself. Above all, gold is not debt. Three questions that I asked at that time were, first, how high can the price of gold actually go? How quickly can it go there? And what will be the factors affecting gold's rise? As I said, I discussed some of the trends and price points represented by six experts in the gold market. Let me share with you some of those that I believe are still very relevant today, 8 years later. A recognized top in the U.S. dollar. Trust in paper assets is declining. The supply-demand deficit in the gold market has resulted in a gold shortage. U.S. government obligations, including the debt and unfunded liabilities, some have calculated to be in excess of $200 trillion. At some point, we will return to some kind of a gold standard, whether that be in part or whole. And to those that say that there's not enough gold to put us on a gold standard, it's really not about the amount of gold that's available. It's about the price ascribed to the gold that is available. China has been amassing gold every year, year in and year out, since 2009 and before, and continues to do it today. A significant dislocation in the economy could easily produce disruptions in the supply chains to food stores. And contrary to many politicians' beliefs, that even if we took 100% of income and corporate profits, it does not solve the debt problem. And there remains a massive, naked gold short position in the gold market, to which the printing press will be the ultimate solution. Many of the conclusions drawn in 2009, based on these economic assertions, I believe still hold true today, and that is, the dollar will continue to decline further. Inflation will increase. Some form of hyperinflation is probable. A replacement or revalued currency is possible. Why? Because gold remains significantly undervalued. Demand for gold as an investment will increase, and competition for physical gold will increase. So in 2009, when I delivered this presentation, and when one took the price point projections of six major leaders in the gold market that ranged from $1,650 to $10,000 at the time, the average of those six values came out to $5,808 as of 2009. We have nowhere approached that number. In fact, gold has not even sustained the lowest number on that price projection chart. And it was about a year after that speech that my late friend Adrian Douglas wrote his paper called Proof of Gold Price Suppression, where he outlined that based on the available gold supply and the amount of currency in circulation, that at that time, a year later in 2010, he calculated with a very precise mathematical formula that the per ounce price of gold could reach $54,000 an ounce. Now, since that time, others in the gold market have asserted the price of gold could rise even higher than that amount. But timing is the ultimate arbiter. And no one has gotten the timing right. Could volcanic explosions in the price of gold occur tomorrow or next week? Sure, it's possible. Could it take potentially another 8 years before those kinds of gyrations begin to occur? That too is entirely possible. Those who predict dates specifically usually tend to get them wrong, because it's often something so far out of left field that will trigger the changes that cause dislocation. Which means the only date you can rely upon is the date you start planning and preparing for your future. By eliminating debt, by acquiring physical assets, and avoiding as much as possible counterparty risk. Much of what was discussed in that 2009 speech is still relevant today, and in many cases has amplified itself. It's like the customer who walks into the antique shop and says, "What's new?" What's new is old and is still relevant today. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember, to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond, your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.